Today's sponsor, W Films. W Films is a full-service video production company located in Lewis, Delaware. Need help getting your message out on social media? How about creating a brand film for your company's website? W Films experts can help you create the perfect video and help you get the social media attention you've been looking for. W Films also specializes in marketing materials for real estate. They can provide cinematic video tour, HDR photography, and a fully immersive 360-degree tour to help your property get sold faster and for more money. To find out more, go to wfilmsmedia.com or call 302-569-0725. 302-569-0725. Everyone has a story. Let us tell yours. All right, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning, October 12th, 2021. Big day today. It is the day that my bicycle gets delivered. I've been, you know, if you're into YouTube and you're into just kind of following, you know, some of the current events, one of the big events that's going on is just this backup of stuff, you know, that we've ordered and, you know, it comes over from wherever it comes over in a container ship. And, you know, and I'm sure you've heard, it seems to be a big, big thing going on right now, but everything has slowed down that all these container ships, these ships that carry containers are all either parked off the coast or stuck in port or something. So if you've ordered something, then we can use the bike as a great example, bicycles. You know, apparently we don't make any bikes here. So if you've been waiting for a bike, well, that's why. Everything is stuck in a ship off the coast. But my bike, which I ordered May 20th, through several different emails of, you know, this is what's going on, you're not getting your bike anytime soon, yada, yada, yada. Finally, today is the day the bicycle shall be delivered. And I'm excited. It's an e-bike, so it's got a battery. I don't know if, you know, a lot of people, you know, have an opinion about e-bikes. I personally am getting an e-bike for just to travel, just to cruise around. I'm not concerned about exercise. I'm not concerned about, you know, becoming a biker, a bicyclist. I just want to ride a bike around that I don't have to worry about having to pedal all the way home. And that's what this bike is really, it's, you know, it's very cool. And I think I shared that I had gone on an e-bike ride with my buddy Shreddy, and we went everywhere, and it was just freedom, you know. And I like to ride bikes. I run. I try to stay, you know, in decent shape. And when I'm running, I get it. I'm just going out for a run. I'm grinding it out. Sometimes I'll sprinkle in some biking in the running, depending on how I'm feeling. That's great, too. Just do a little 10-mile ride. I'm not here to be amazing. Just, you know, get the cardio up. But this bike is literally just for exploring and checking out all the stuff that we have here in Delaware, to at least in my around the beach area, that I can go check out and, you know, don't have to worry about riding it all the way home. I can have a little pedal assist. So I'll keep you posted on that. Very excited. A little nervous. It's a, you know, it's a pretty cool e-bike. I mean, it's the Aerial Rider 52 Volt Grizzly. Dual motors, dual batteries. Thing's pretty sweet. So that's going on. And what else? So in December, I'm going to celebrate 13 years of sobriety. You know, God willing, and the creek don't rise, right? And I've talked about this before. So 13 years ago in December will be the last time I took a pill. You know, it wasn't the last time that I had a drink. The last time I had a drink was 15 years ago. And I've talked about it. You know, it was just, it was, I was a garbage can. I do it, whatever. But the last thing, you know, that got me in a jam up were pills. And they, you know, they came into my life through the injury to my back. 1999, deadlifting. I've said this 100 times. If you deadlift, don't do it. I don't care. I don't care how amazing deadlifting makes you. I don't care how important it is as an exercise. I don't even care how well you do it. don't do it. Find another exercise, less stressful on the back, less risky, right? There's more than one way to skin a cat. And when it comes to deadlifting, you know, and anytime I say this to somebody, they always get all upset. Well, don't worry about me. You know, I saw, there was a girl posting her deadlifts on Instagram, and I wrote, you know, I wouldn't do those. I don't even remember what she said, but I remember it was like, shut up, basically telling me to shut up and mind my own business, and that's fine. She's right, I should, but, you know, some people like to jump up on their high horse on certain things, and mine is deadlifting. Don't do it, because I, like them, love deadlifting, was definitely into it, you know, working out with a buddy. He's like, we got deadlift, it'll so make us so strong. I was like, let's do it, and it is good. The problem for me, at least, and maybe this is just a me problem, but, you know, you keep adding weight, just like everything you do. You know, you want to keep getting better and better. So you add that weight, and then the next thing you know, everything is good until it is not. And then when it is not, it's really not. And that's what happened with my back. Lifting that, I think I had 4 plates on each side. I went for the lift. I had lifted it. I had done it. Picked it up. You know, put it back down. I was feeling awesome. And then the second time, I just didn't give it the same amount of respect that I had given it the first time. And, you know, didn't focus, got just a little twisted. Because with that kind of weight, for me, 4 plates, that was a lot. For me, it had to be perfect. You know, everything had to be lined up just perfect, straight up, not with my lower back. And for some reason, I just didn't lift it right, and pop. I mean, halfway up, pop. I felt it pop, drop that weight. And right from that second till now, my life has been different. It's been affected by constant chronic back pain. I have no strength when I'm at a 45-degree angle, which means, you know, if I bent over at the hips and, you know, all the way flat, you know, straight, that would be a 90 degree, and straight up is 180 degrees. So in between 45, I have no strength in my back, all pain. If I'm trying to get out of bed or if I'm trying to roll around in bed, I have no strength, all pain. And then there's just days where it just aches and hurts. And, you know, that's when I got involved in the pain pills and just ran amok, you know. I'm an addict with whatever it is, you know, alcohol, pain pills, it doesn't matter. One isn't enough, or 100 isn't enough, and one is too many. So got all fucked up in that shit. And that would be my last, you know, final drug that I would use before I got sober. So yesterday, the whole reason about this story is, one, if you're deadlifting, be careful. I mean, you know, I'd say don't. You'd say do, and I'll look like a fool. And quietly, one day, privately, between you and the weights, you'll pull your back. And I hope the first thought isn't that I said not to. But you'll go, you know, I had been warned. People, I know I'm not the only person that warns people about deadlifting. People warn others, and you probably have been warned. And it's inevitable. Inevitable. So be careful. But the point the point of the whole story was yesterday I got an injection in my back. And this was kind of a big deal for me because, one, I was a little concerned, and I'm not one that concerns with much. I don't, you know, I don't become overwhelmed with anxiety and fear for something, unless it's like a root canal, but I wasn't concerned. I did have a little concern. I was afraid, and this was something that I created. I'd never heard of this happening, but I was concerned that if I got the injection that a nerve could be hit, you know. I knew a lady that got drop foot. Big fear of mine. I do not want to get that. So that was a little bit of a concern, but, you know, I did it yesterday, and my wife took me in. You know, we thought, because they're like, you need to go to the surgery center. You have to have a person bring you. You have to have a person drive you. So drive you home. So I thought they were going to put me under. And, you know, the addict inside, part of me was like, you know, looking forward to it. I had a colonoscopy a couple years ago, and they put you under. And I remember asking the lady, I'm like, what are you putting me under with? And she goes, fentanyl. I was like, holy shit. And I remember giving that injection. I was like, oh, you know, for a second in time, you feel this kind of thing. And then the next thing you know, I was passed out and waking up. But there was a brief moment. You get high and it's okay, I suppose. I mean, you know, you got to get the procedure done. So, you know, if I'm going to be honest, there was part of me that was kind of looking forward to that, but they didn't put me under, which was totally cool because, you know, I hate admitting the fact that I wasn't looking forward to getting put under. But they didn't put me under, you know, but you start, I wasn't sure, and I start worrying about, you know, not waking up and, you know, creating all this drama in my head, this self-centered pity party-ish. And I wasn't really feeling sorry for myself, but anytime I think I do create some story where I die, you know, there's some self in there. But regardless, I got the shot, and I actually feel better. My back feels better. I don't know how long it's going to last. They said that it could take up to 7 days to get the relief from the shot. I had relief pretty much on the way home. So I'm hoping that it'll only improve. But for the most part, 90% of the day, my back feels really pretty damn good. There's still a little weakness when I'm in bed trying to, like if I'm on my back and I want to lay on my side or stomach to get flipped over, that still hurts. So it's not, you know, it's not perfect, but it definitely feels better. That's cool. I'm excited. So I talked about this. I don't know. I did a podcast the other day, and I just could never quite get it going. Tried a few times. I'm like, you know what? It's just not, it's not the time for it. And I just, you know, shut it down, and I said, I'll try a different day. And so, but I think the other day I talked about the struggle with getting to this new meeting, and or not a new, the meeting that I go to, the Monday, the meeting that happens yesterday, which I didn't get to because, you know, life started back up again. Summer's over. School's going. It's hard for me to get to that meeting. And so I haven't been. But I just thought that I would maybe just kind of, I know where the meeting's probably at, starting with the first step. You know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives have become unmanageable. I love this step. I've talked about in the past, and this is just for me. This is my story, but you know, a big portion of my sobriety was a self-based sobriety. You know, early recovery, early meetings, early unwinding of the twisted mess that I'd become, you know, looking back on it, is a lot of self-motivating kind of stuff. I'd lived in such a shitty place for so long. First of all, I didn't even understand that it was taking place. It's taken me years of being sober and going through the steps and discussing them and, you know, feeling one way and then having revelations and feeling another way. But the biggest revelation that I've learned about it, for me at least, was that this first step, my first run through these steps was really self, very self-based kind of stuff. And so, you know, you got sobriety and you have serenity. You know, first time, early sobriety, it was all sobriety. You know, get me off the shit. Let's document how long it's been. Let's, you know, feel great. And I think that's all good stuff. But it would be, you know, many years later where I would start to understand the serenity side of it. You know, I'd love to do, if I could write a book, if I could do something like that, I'd love to write a book said Early Serenity. You know, instead of early sobriety, early serenity. They aren't the same, at least for me. This is just me putting out some thoughts, but sobriety and serenity are not the same. I think you definitely need sobriety to find serenity, but sobriety does not guarantee serenity. I don't think you can find serenity unless you are free from the drink, so they definitely go hand in hand, but you know, to come into a program, for me at least, and to, you know, you get a coin, you get some time, and, you know, that's all feels good, and it's all like, look at, you know, look at me, right? And that's perfectly normal. I mean, look how bad I'd been. So to finally do something well was nice. You know, your parents right away are proud of you, reluctantly, but proud. You know, your friends. Usually all the people, you know, and I've talked about this before, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And to me, what really happened is my life had become unmanageable to everybody else. And so those are the people that usually start to recognize, you know, the early changes. And you know, it feels good, like when your boss says, oh, you know, you don't smell like alcohol, or you're on time, or, you know, you're not sleeping under the table when you come to work. You know, they start to notice, your parents start to notice, you're going to meetings, you know. I remember my mom would always be, doing your meetings? I say, yes, Mom. You know, that feels good to them. In turn, that feels good to me. You know, so it's, it usually starts with all the ones, the closest to you, that my behavior had become unmanageable. And that's usually friends and coworkers. And then, you know, the second group of people start to recognize, and it does feel good. And there's nothing wrong with it. But at the same time, it's kind of, you know, feeding into something that really is the reason we were here in the first place, which is, I'm a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility. And that's a, it's a hard thing to understand, unless you've been like kind of sober and work in a program and, you know, had the ups and downs through the program, because there are a ton of ups and downs. You know, you feel good, and then, you know, they talk about that pink cloud, and it starts to fade and turns to gray, and, you know, when everybody stops praising you, and just how wonderful we are doing starts to wear off, you know, we kind of fall back into that, like it is today, just kind of gray and rainy and gloomy. And that's a lot of time when that addiction sneaks back in and has a conversation.
Thank you.
great, great example, Lane Staley, you know. Lost too soon, you know. Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to, you know, I'm just sharing my experience. I'm not sure that you can't get to, you know, you have to go through the shit, right? And the first step is tough. You know, it's really about just refraining from drinking and just holding on. You know, if it said we admitted we were powerless over self, that our lives would become unmanageable, I think that for me at least, that gives me a little bit of a different understanding or a better understanding of what I'm really dealing with. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. When it's said like that, it makes me believe that my problem is alcohol. And when my problem is alcohol, and especially when I'm into like a series of days of being free from alcohol, it, you know, I start to think that, hey, I've fixed the problem. And I have. I have absolutely fixed the problem, which is that when I pick up a drink and I cannot stop. That's my problem. If I could just solve that problem, I'm doing something. And you know what? Sometimes that's enough. You know, that feels fantastic. That feels spiritual. That feels like a gift from God, right? You know, to take away that desire, that burden of wanting a drink. Because when you, if you're an alcoholic and you are in that place where you cannot stop, you're just like, how the fuck did I get to this spot? How come I cannot quit this shit? So to actually put some days, you know, between you and the last time you had a drink feels great. And honestly, congratulations. Don't give up. Hang in there. I don't know if our Sober October folks or how they're doing. I hope you're doing great. Hang in there. You know, it looks like you're almost halfway through. But just that miracle is a miracle. But it, unfortunately, it doesn't last. You know, every day that goes by since my last drink is every day that I can somehow create some story in my head that makes me believe that drinking and drugging wasn't as bad as I had thought it was. You know, you put down the shit, and you know, a week later, you're like, gosh, was it that bad? I mean, it wasn't that bad, right? I mean, I've had the conversation. You know, there was a time when before I got sober, I had tried to get sober. I would put a day, I would get a couple days. You know, I really didn't want to quit drinking. I just wanted the bad stuff to stop happening. And unfortunately, that requires the quitting of the drinking. But I could never seem to put it together. You know, I'd go a day. You know, I talked about when I was in San Diego and I was had to go turn myself into the jail. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to, you know, I've got 5 months before I turn myself in or whatever it was. And all of a sudden it was down to 5 days. And I'm like, okay, I got to quit, you know, doing this fucking meth. And I got high and then was driven down there. I mean, I just could not stop. And it's the same way with alcohol. You know, I got to stop drinking. I got to do some stuff. And then I'd be like, well, I'm just going to go to this thing I had to do slightly drunk. I just couldn't stop. But, you know, we admit our powers over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable, and we take out that alcohol and we start to feel better. And that's fine. But over time and over years, you know, I like the idea of looking at the step as we admit we're powerless over self. Meaning we're powerless over whatever I want. When it comes to that point and I want something, I don't really have any defense against it. You know, the fact that that a lot of the time was me wanting to have a drink or drug was definitely a big motivator. But, you know, take away the alcohol, there's still a lot of fucking weird shit that I do, you know, that's self-centered. So to admit we were powerless over self, and that our lives have become unmanageable, to me, was really when I started to try to figure out the serenity side of this, the peace side. And, you know, I don't know about you, but it's one of the tough things is to try as a man, you know, as a young man, and living in a world, you know, you want to have ego. I mean, you don't, but I felt like I did. You know, I wanted to, you know, appear more aggressive in my life. I wanted to appear tough, right? I wanted to people to be afraid of me, I guess. Not literally, but, you know, it's just a position, a more of a self-position, more ego kind of lifestyle. And, unfortunately, is that when I decided to start to work on the serenity side of my life, whereas, you know, I had to start waving that white flag. I had to start taking the high road. I had, you know, being right wasn't as important. Being tough wasn't as important. Being, you know, manipulating people through, you know, intimidation or education wasn't as important. You know, if someone, you know, 15 years ago, you get in, my dad's a great example. Him and I would butt heads on everything. I'm an adult. I have an opinion. I should know. I'm not 10. And he's like, I'm 70 and I should know. And him and I would go after it. And that was that's when this all kind of, the serenity side of this all started happening for me, is when I said, listen, I'm waving the white flag. It isn't important that I'm right. It doesn't matter that I'm a man and that I should demand respect. You know, what's important here is that you, him, and I, you know, we needed to finish our life together. And hopefully we were going to do it in a positive, surrendering kind of way. But, you know, that may not be the lifestyle for everybody. You know, people might not live in a life where they can just, you know, throw the white flag and surrender and be okay with it. You know, some people live in a different kind of situation, and being tough and ego and pride is, you know, sometimes you're only saving grace. And, you know, to flip it and all of a sudden become very passive, very non-aggressive, very, you know, surrender, high roadish kind of things, that's, you know, it's tough for some people, especially when you've portrayed yourself as big, bad, and tough for so long. And then to be, you know, hey, you're right, I'm wrong, you know, I apologize, you know, trying to find some humility in our life. It's tough. It's tough for some people. You know, as a person today that continues to try to work on this, I try not to get into it. I try not to mix it up. You know, it's not important that I'm right. I see a lot of this when I try to have a conversation with my son David, because, you know, I have experienced it. And I've experienced, unfortunately, more than I should have. I've experienced too much shit. And, you know, I find myself, or I hear myself, you know, trying to explain everything in life. I feel it happens also with my wife. You know, her and I will be watching TV and something will happen. I'm going to this whole explanation of why this is going on. I'm like, Tom, shut the fuck up. You know, I'm not my father. At least I didn't recognize that I was turning into him. But that's kind of what happens to us. We've seen it. We've heard it all. We've done it all. And so for me to wave the white flag on that, you know, is a big deal. Let's see if we can do a quick reading. I'm having trouble with this podcast a little bit. The fact that I'm not going to that meeting is one. I start to go, what's my point? Why am I even doing this? So hopefully I'll figure it out. Try to find some new stuff to talk about. All right. 12th of October. Right? Yeah. Curbing rashness. Ooh. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. Read that again. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. So those are some other words. Fair-minded and tolerant, I think, are also words of humility. You know, if you're trying to take a more of a humble position, you want to be fair-minded, meaning that what that means to me is that I want to look at both sides of the story. I want to be fair. If you have any kids, especially if you have a blended family like we do, we deal with this a lot, because it's easy for me to be, you know, compassionate about my son wanting something. And it's easy for me to be harder on my daughter because, you know, she's not my daughter. She's my wife's daughter. I'm her daddy now. But, you know, at some point, And if you, I think this happens a lot with blended families, but you know, it's easy to be tough on your stepdaughter and let my son get away with the world. So, you know, one of the cool, great things about sobriety and this program, and it allows me to recognize this, hey, you know, don't, you tend to be harder on her than you are with him. You can't put rules down for her that that you don't make him follow. So fair-minded and tolerant, you know, that's, tolerant is a, you know, a humble-based word. All right. That was the 12 Steps, 12 Traditions, page 91. Being fair-minded and tolerant is a goal towards which I must work daily. I ask God, as I understand him, to help me to be loving and tolerant to my loved ones. Excuse me. That's right. I mean, if you're, the fact that you're asking God, that's humility, right? All right, let me do this again. Being fair-minded and tolerant is a goal towards which I must work daily. I ask God, as I understand him, to help me to be loving and tolerant to my loved ones and to those with whom I am close in contact. I ask for guidance to curb my speech when I am agitated, and I take a moment to reflect on the emotional upheaval my words may cause, not only to someone else, but also to myself. Prayer, meditation, and inventories are the key to sound thinking and positive actions for me. That is absolutely right. You know, this is all the serenity side of it. This isn't as much sobriety, but this is more about serenity, which is to me surrendering and having a lot of give and take in life. I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks for letting me share. Bye.